Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, or what used to be Twitter. Coming up at 11:33, Matt Miller from onmilwaukee.com will join us all to talk about movies and what's coming up at the box office and other entertainment things. Of course, Summerfest is going on down at Milwaukee's Lakefront. Got two more weekends.
And I hope you're having a good time, Summerfest people, and staying dry.
That has never stopped Summerfest people. That will not affect Summerfest people at all.
You know what makes my beer taste good, Jane?
A little rain.
Rainwater.
You want to cut it with a little rainwater.
Exactly.
So Matt Miller joining us at 11:33. Hope you can stick around for that. Wanted to start off this hour. This just hit JS Online from Paul Smith. Coalition forms to propose solutions to DNR's fish and wildlife funding shortfall. The Wisconsin Wildlife Federation leading a coalition to propose solutions to this funding shortfall, the agency projecting $15.5 million deficit in 2026. And I think we all agree that we love Wisconsin, and one of the things that we love so much about this place are our rivers and our lakes,
yeah,
and all of the incredible natural resources that we have here. And the DNR helps to protect those things.
That is one of those things that we've heard from politicians when they knock on doors, when they go to the dairy breakfast, when they go to the suburban, rural, urban areas. That is something that does connect us, a sense of conservation,
yes,
of taking care of our land, and we don't want to mess with that. And we need, I'm sorry, but it's true. We need the DNR to help facilitate that sorts of conservation, working with small private groups, nonprofits. But that DNR, why? What are we doing now?
Led by the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, this effort's intended to stimulate conversations among stakeholders about potential solutions to the DNR's funding problems and come up with a plan to address them. The executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, Cody Komrowski, quoted in today's Journal Sentinel in this article, "The problem's pretty well known. But unless something changes, it will only get worse. For about a decade, the DNR has been reporting shortfalls and warning of even greater problems in the future in its fish and wildlife account. And that is the primary money source for our fisheries, our wildlife and law enforcement programs. It gets almost all of it in-state funding from sales of fishing and hunting licenses and other related stamps."
I feel like there was a proposal to also then raise some fees as well to help bring some revenues in. But there's got to be long-term planning. There has to be more funding. It can't all come from these, a guy buying a fishing license or someone going to a state park and paying however much it is to go into a state park. There has to be a steady revenue stream going to all of these
agencies,
groups and agencies to keep them funded. Cause that's all we hear about nowadays, whether it's state, national, IRS, with the overturning or the Chevron doctrine decision, OSHA, all these groups are getting their funding cut, and all these groups are going to be gutted and they're going to be replaced. And then in 5 years from now, we'll be like, what happened to all our land? Well, we didn't do enough, because those groups need the money, but we need to do the voting. We need to keep our eye on it. And stay aware of things.
I mean, for folks who are my age, I'm 64. I remember when the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland caught fire. The pollution was so bad in the 1970s. It's easy to forget. It is easy to forget where we were with our conservation efforts in the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm, compared to where we are now. And you mentioned this to me this morning before we got on the air, that it was Richard Nixon, of all people,
yep,
who formed the EPA.
EPA, Clean Water Act, all those things that the quote-unquote liberal agenda like to push, and rightfully so. We want clean water. We want clean air. We want the environment to be protected. It was started in a time when, and those things happened with the stroke of a pen where it said, yeah, of course we do this.
Of course we're going to protect our waterways.
These are lands and mechanisms for our children and our children's children. That is the thing that just blows my mind every time I start to think about it. And then I just get really sad, is that you have all these individuals who work for companies who say, we're going to do everything we can to chip away at land rights. We're going to chip away at the water. We're going to take it for our own. We're going to pollute it how we want. We're going to drill. We're going to dig. We're going to build bigger and better. And then these people claim to love family and claim that we are one below a great being. Doesn't that being want us to take care of the land? Doesn't that be, shouldn't your goal is to set up a world that is better than the one you're living in now for your children? And I get really heated about this because the hypocrisy is just right there.
But I think, and maybe I'm completely off base here, but for some people who believe the end times are coming and believe in the end times, mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about the earth. I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be sucked up into the air and saved.
And that may be the case, but I don't believe they're all Fortune 500 CEOs. And that's that. I think that's my point, is like, yeah, we can't, if you believe in that, if you believe in the end of days, if you believe in the rapture, if you believe in all that stuff where one day the swords are coming for judgment. Okay. I understand. Fine. I'm certainly not going to change your mind in 30 minutes, but we don't have to shepherd it. We don't have to make it progress. It's going to happen whether it happens, but this idea that, you know, we don't have to worry about the lands. Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
This Fish and Wildlife account, and again, this is from an article in Milwaukee's Journal Sentinel today from Paul Smith about the DNR's fish and wildlife funding is really having problems, and that account is the primary funding source, again, for the DNR's fisheries, wildlife, and law enforcement programs. It also includes habitat improvement projects, fish and wildlife population assessments. We talk about this all the time. They keep track of the elk herd. They keep track of the deer herd. They keep track of all the various populations in Wisconsin, fish and pheasant propagation and stocking, and the enforcement of fish and game laws by conservation wardens. We don't want people poaching.
Yes. It is so overarching their power and their responsibilities. They need the power to do that, and the power comes from funding. Tony on the live stream has a capital idea. Well, if the DNR would take a quote unquote kickback from big polluters, they'd be fully funded. And then Andrew says, Tony, those are now called gratuities as long as they're not discussed beforehand. Talking about yesterday's decision.
Yes.
You know, I think this is great. Tony, Andrew, the synergy on your thinking. We just need to give them money on the back end.
Just a soupçon of corruption.
Wet the beak.
Just a taste. Nice Godfather
just
reference.
Just a taste.
Nice. Mark from Prairie du Sac is on the line. Good morning, Mark. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for this topic, because that was the agency I worked for my career with the state of Wisconsin, is the DNR. I was an accountant there, and you know, saw the ups and downs of the funding. And I'm also a user of natural resources. That I've been buying hunting and fishing licenses since I was 14 years old. So that's a long time. I mean, I've bought something every year. And as a sportsman, I mean, I'm fully aware that we should, you know, maybe bump up the fees there, and maybe find ways of finding some kind of, you know, another revenue stream, you know, for the quote unquote non-consumptive users to kick in a little bit. Because, you know, if you're a bird watcher and enjoy watching wildlife, you know, maybe there should be some way to encourage those people to, you know, to kick in, you know, if they, and most of them do.
I was going to say, I would imagine that they would have no problem with that.
Yeah.
And it's just a shame that Republicans like Theodore Roosevelt started the conservation movement in this country, but the Republicans seem to have sided with the polluters now, and it's kind of sad. I mean, look on the Supreme Court. Neil Gorsuch, his mother, Ann Gorsuch, was actually kind of let polluters get away with stuff back when she was head of the EPA back in the day, and that's still a burr under his blanket because he wants to avenge his mom.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah. Always appreciate you checking in. Yeah, we're talking about the DNR, Fish and Wildlife Program, is having funding issues, and it also just seems like something else that has been kicked, the can has been kicked down the road over and over and over and over mm-hmm. and over again, and no one wants to deal with it and come up with alternate funding sources, even though it sounds like everybody pretty much agrees that we need to fund this.
Yeah, and what's going to happen is one day people are going to be shrugging their shoulders going, what happened? What's going on here? And the people at the DNR and the EPA will say, we told you.
We told you this was coming.
4 years and years and years. Once again, this is reactive thinking, not proactive thinking.
The price of most resident hunting and fishing licenses, including general fishing and deer hunting, have not changed since 2005. Although more than a dozen Wisconsin conservation groups organized a push in 2017 to increase license fees, guess what? The GOP-controlled legislature rejected it.
I'm not laughing because it's funny.
If nothing else, they're consistent.
I mean, no one's getting money. No one's. You got PFAS, you get no money. You want good conservation of the land, you get no money. I mean, how many of the GOP members in Madison are hunters and fishermen? I'll bet you
a fair
amount. But yet they're just going to let this slide. Make it make sense. Are there any GOP members of our audience who are hunters and fishermen? Make it make sense to us. Tell us why. But I have an idea. I have an idea, and I'll make it very fast. That is, if we all, I'm not a hunter, I'm not a fisherman. If I just buy a license, if we all just bought a license, it's not cheap, but you buy a license, we could fund the DNR.
Everybody?
Why not? Why not? Do your part. Get a license. You don't have to hunt. You don't even have to fish.
PJ on the live stream is a person on SSI. I enjoy the $7 fishing license. I would pay 10 bucks if the fee goes up.
I'll buy 5 of them.
All right. It's all on Greg now.
Oh, boy.
All right. Speaking of fish, we have a freaky creature of the week on the way next. Matt Miller joining us coming up at 11:33 to talk all things entertainment. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Galby on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha, where you can always join us at 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are talking about an article in today's Journal Sentinel from Paul A. Smith, Coalition Forms to Propose Solutions to DNR's Fish and Wildlife Funding Shortfall. This has been a long time in the works with the DNR, this particular part, having funding issues. And Mike from West Bend is joining us on the phone. Good morning, Mike. Thank you so much for joining us. What did you want to say about this?
Well, first, thanks for having a program like this. It's very enlightening. Very few radio shows will talk about this. I have a house in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I have a home, obviously, down here in the Kettle Moraine. We haven't had a conservation leader as a governor, probably Tony Earle or Knowles. None of the governors are conservation leaders in our state. Now you go to Michigan and you have Whitmer. She takes the COVID money, millions of dollars, and builds great boat slips and helps out the Western UP and puts all of that money into that DNR fund up there to help them keep them going. That comes from leadership. And as far as our legislatures, both sides of the aisle drop the ball. And at 75 years of age, and I've been a trapper for over 40 years, if you would buy licensing, I buy one, all of it, a CP license every year, even though I don't use much of it because others do. And I think they should also register non-motorized boats. And I think people should pay to use the horse trails. I think there's a lot of interesting ways to fund, but they're going to need that money. Because I got 10 years of being paid by the DNR. Well, my funding was coming out of that funding program. And, you know, things don't take care of itself.
Right.
You know?
Right, Mike? We are supposed to be taking care of this stuff.
We are supposed to be
the stewards of this.
Exactly.
Texter listening in Madison on WMDX. Under Walker, state parks needed to be self-sustaining, including the building projects. And Mike seemed to kind of agree with what you said, Greg, about everybody buying a license, whether or not you're going to use it.
Yeah.
Andrew from Maine texting in, if every Wisconsinite bought a fishing license, the DNR wouldn't have to spend as much time checking and enforcing licenses because everyone would have one.
Let's just make it part of your regular driver's license, too. So you get
a real fishing license.
The real ID / fishing gaming license. I'm totally down for this. Folks, let's put in the work. Let's get this done. We'll do it together. Madison won't help us. We'll help ourselves.
It is really disappointing, to Mike's point, though, to see the lack of stewardship.
Yeah. And it's frustrating to see, once again, Michigan, Minnesota,
yes,
doing these things that, of course, just seem like of course we're going to do this. Yeah, that just makes sense. And we have to hem and haw and get embarrassed that our state legislature either doesn't have the time, the desire, or the capabilities of making this happen.
They have vacation they have to use, Greg Bach.
They've
got places to go and people, it's just not here.
We're almost in July, so that's... they are month four. They're going into month four or five of their 10-month vacation.
Nice. Oh, that's nice.
Guys, just remember this when you get back, okay? Just put it on the docket for when you get back.
Yeah, it'll wait. It'll wait. Oh, and by the way, and I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to mention this to Mike, and I'm sure he'll agree. Mike, just tell Michigan we want the UP back. It's ours.
It's ours.
It's ours. I'm sorry. It just is. Sharky from Racine is on the line. Good morning, Sharky. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for all this great programming. I've been going up to the Monaco area since I'm 6 years old. And today, as we speak here, all six of our family cars have the state stamps for the state parks as well. And I buy a fishing license. I buy a hunting license. And I tell you what, though, as I proceed and move, I'm a 65, I'll tell you what, nothing burns my
posterior. Your bacon?
Yeah, bacon. You know, to remember the story about Mr. Walker. When he worked the deal with the state of Wisconsin, it was a swampy, ugly forest that he traded for the U-Line people because they wanted to expand their the U-Line people up north in the Manitouche water areas. They traded, like I say, 40 acres of swamp for beautiful, almost 300 feet of access in Manitouche waters. And everybody said, oh, that's just okay. Mr. Walker obviously knew who the U-Lines were, and it wasn't just happenstance.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Sharky, and thank you so much for listening. Really, really do appreciate it. Yeah, I can't necessarily say that Scott Walker was a great steward of the environment. But there is this frustration, and I think it can be across the board that we are all frustrated with our legislature sitting on $4 billion.
Yeah.
Is it $4 billion?
$4 billion of a surplus.
And they know better. On what it should be spent on.
Sitting on other monies that are earmarked for specific projects that they're just not going to release. Because to do that would give the other side a win.
Oh, can't have that.
No, can't have that while we sit here and suffer.
Just a couple of minutes left. And since this is what we teased, I do think it's important that we mention this. And we'll get a picture in the show notes because you actually need to see this. This is the Freaky Creature of the Week. Earlier this month, a massive fish thought to only live in temperate waters washed up on Oregon's North Shore. It is a 7.3-foot hoodwinker sunfish. It's enormous.
Yeah, it looks like a big old cast iron skillet.
It shows a flat, round, gray fish lying on its side in the sand. You don't appreciate how big it is until you see the photo of a person kneeling next to it and a pickup truck parked next to it. To give you some appreciation for just how large this fish was.
Hmm.
7.3 foot, 2.2 meter. Hoodwinker sunfish, not here in Wisconsin, but it showed up on the beach in Gearhart at the beginning of June, according to the Seaside Aquarium in Gearhart, Oregon. We'll put a link to that article in the show notes. Give Greg about an hour. What is that face for?
It's just sad looking because I didn't know there were more than one picture. Now I'm looking at all the pictures and now I'm sad.
It's a big fish.
It's a big fish, but it's a big sad looking dead fish.
Well, yeah, it's dead now, yes. You're going to be okay?
I'll be fine.
Regroup.
Okay.
News is next. And then when we return, Matt Miller from onmilwaukee.com will be here to talk all things entertainment. I hope you can stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin almost on a daily basis. He joins us on the last Friday of every month. He is the entertainment guru at onmilwaukee.com. Matt Miller is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. I'm doing well.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. I am very excited because I am not a big scary movie fan, but I do love the Quiet Place franchise with John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. And there's a new one out. And I really want it to be good.
Sans, Jim from The Office, and Emily Blunt. They are not in this movie. He's not directing this movie. And I am happy to report for you that it is a quite good movie.
Yay!
It is a quiet place, more like a quite good film. I don't know.
Hey-o! Boo, boo, boo!
Hey-o! And I will be interested to see what people think of this movie when they see it this weekend, because I will say it is not like a nonstop thrill ride. It is not a, you know, it's got some good monster moments. It's definitely got good monster moments in it. The horror stuff is fun and exciting and thrilling, but the meat of the movie is really this kind of sad, mournful, tender storyline between two people whose lives are falling apart as a result of aliens crashing to Earth.
That'll happen.
But also their own lives and their own things going on. And I think that's really, it's a very quiet movie and not in the way people are expecting, where, you know, it's a movie about be quiet, monsters will kill you. It's a quiet movie about people dealing with death and grief and dealing with their lives falling apart, which is very interesting. And the director of this is Michael Sarnowski, who directed Pig. If you remember the Nicolas Cage Truffle Pig movie,
yeah.
And everyone was like, that sounds like the goofiest movie of all time. And it turned out to be the best movie of 2021. And it's interesting because it feels a lot like, you get nervous when a director makes a great indie movie and then he gets into a franchise. And
sure.
You're like, oh boy, is this director gone?
Sell out.
Exactly. And this feels like a movie directed by the guy who made Pig. It is a movie about people who are sad and mourning and trying to grip to things as the world collapses around them. And the monster stuff is really fun, but I think the human stuff is really what shines in this. Is that what people are going to want to see during a summer blockbuster? We'll find out. But I'm very excited that this movie is not only scary and intense, but also genuinely good and thoughtful.
Well, that was, I mean, this is kind of another example of the movie American Fiction with Jeffrey Wright. Mm. I felt you were given this one idea in the trailer. It's this movie about a black author who's going to write in this book in jest. And really the story is about the connection between the family that you get sucked into and the book's like, oh, that's fun.
That's part of it.
But you're like, oh my gosh, I'm connecting with these people so deeply. Yeah. And I love that he created with this new Quiet Place movie that connection as well. I who knows, maybe I'll see it. The scaredy cat du jour might see. Now, is John Krasinski at all involved in this? I imagine he's probably executive producer because he created the first movie.
Producer, and I think he helped come up with the story for this. But it really feels like Sarnowski's movie. It has the same tone of Pig. It has an elegance to the way that it's filmed and a weird kind of beauty to it. And it is interesting you bring up the American Fiction analogy, because I don't think that's wrong in terms of, you know, it's almost like American Fiction has the comedy in it just so they had something to sell.
Yeah.
And they were like, come for the comedy, but stay for the family stuff. And that's a little bit what this Quiet Place feels like, where it's like the horror stuff is solid and good, but you can tell that, like, I really want to make a movie about this, you know, Lupita Nyong'o's character dealing with her life. And yes, there's stuff going on, obviously, with monsters, but she's got, you know, her own, you know, mortality that she's looking at. And that's a big thing. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I hope people, it looks like it's set for a big weekend this weekend. How people react to it, we'll see. I really enjoy it. I think it's a good time and a genuinely good movie.
Is it set up at the end for yet another sequel?
It's not obvious, but the sandbox is so big and so kind of vaguely sketched out. There's so much room in here where you can kind of, it's kind of like a zombie. It's like Dawn of the Dead, where, like, okay, its focus is so narrow that you can kind of jump to wherever you want to in this world and you would have a story to tell.
Well, on your recommendation, I'm going to look up all the spoilers before I go to the movie this weekend, because I'm a chicken. I want to know when the monsters are coming, Matt. I just do.
You're one of those people who reads the last page of the book and then don't do that.
I don't read.
That's such a film critic thing to say, Matt. You're ruining the art form. Why would you do that?
No, I would never say anything like that. No.
I didn't tweet that earlier this morning.
Matt Miller joins us the last Friday of every month from onmilwaukee.com to talk all things entertainment, just talking about the new Quiet Place that is debuting at your theater near you this weekend. Inside Out 2 is doing really well, and I have heard varying opinions about that movie.
I think it's quite good. I don't think it's quite the emotional nuclear bomb that the first Inside Out was turned me into a puddle of snot and tears, but it's still quite good. I know some people don't love the kind of Pixar, you know, we make emotions all neat and tidy and these like clean rules and stuff like that. I think it works for this kind of movie because this one's a little bit messier, which I think works because you're doing a movie about someone going through puberty. You're someone, you know, becoming an adult and dealing with the complicated emotions of, you know, friends and changes and all these things. And of course the movie should be a little bit messier as a result. It'd be weird if it wasn't.
If it weren't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the best Pixar movies create their world and rules really smoothly. I mean, you think about Toy Story and just how, like, you just get dropped into that world and you're just in it and you totally get it. Elemental last year was a little clunkier in terms of being like, well, there's all these worlds and all this stuff. And I think Inside Out 2 has a little bit of that clunky, you know, how do we build this world out situation going on. But I think it's a lovely movie. I cried again. I'm not going to say almost. I did it again.
Good for
not
you.
Not as bad as the first time, but definitely got some good tears out of me. A lot of good laughs, too. Some genuinely funny, creative bits about emotion and feelings that I had a really good time with. And it's going to be this year's first $1 billion grossing movie worldwide. It is a monster hit.
Really? I didn't even know that.
It has made so much money in 3 weeks. It's making more money right now than Barbie. Like, it is on a path to make more money than Barbie last year.
Wow.
It's going to make more money than Oppenheimer. I don't know why Hollywood is like being like, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't understand why this movie is becoming a monster hit and no one's talking about it. That's kind of Hollywood self-defeating right there, where it's, you know, they've got this monster hit and they're like, oh, let's talk about how disastrous things are instead.
I just feel like animation has never ever gotten the respect that it deserves.
No, and it's a kid's movie and a sequel, and I think that's maybe a little less exciting to talk about, like when there's Barbenheimer, and there was this feeling of like, ooh, maybe this means people are going to see different types of movies beyond, you know, superheroes and sequels, which they are a little bit, which is nice. But yeah, and I do think a big thing to take away from Inside Out 2 is the younger generations go to movies. They just want their own franchises, please. You know, enough of 80-year-old Indiana Jones, enough of, you know, reboots of movies that existed four decades before they were born. They want their own movies. That's why Despicable Me does really well. That's why Inside Out is doing really well. It was a movie that they grew up with. That is their Toy Story. If you want box office to survive again, if you want it to be exciting and you want these movies to show up, you got to give the younger generations their movies and older generations their movies. You need to have a little bit of something for everybody.
And sometimes you just need to say goodbye to certain franchises. Yes. I mean, I'm sorry, but I tried watching Indiana Jones and the Dial of
Destiny or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. The Dial. Yeah. Yeah. I was just like, this is just, it's too little too late. And someone put it really well. They said, you know, in the years between the fourth one and the fifth one, there were no games, there were no comic books, there were no TV shows. It was just all of a sudden they're like, here's another Indiana Jones movie. And a lot of young people are like, who's this? Why should I care about this guy?
And I think they know Indiana Jones, but they don't want to see 78-year-old, you know, Indiana Jones running about. That is the antithesis of what people want from an adventure movie.
Yeah.
And the worst thing about that Dial of Destiny movie wasn't even, you know, the nitpicks you could do or the CGI or anything like that. It's just deeply boring. And, you know, there's nothing worse that an Indiana Jones movie can be than boring. That is the cardinal sin of a blockbuster like that. But yeah, so hopefully we're seeing some new franchises popping up, and we're seeing stuff for, because I saw some statistics. Everyone loves to blame younger audiences for not going to the movies. Oh my gosh, you know, the millennials and Gen Zs, they're not showing up to the movies. They're on their TikToks. What's wrong with them? Proportion-wise, percentage-wise, younger people go to movies more often than people 50 and older. It is older audiences who are failing the box office and failing the movies. And in part of that is older audiences. Look at the lineup in theaters. What's there for them to see? You know, there's not a lot of movies for adults anymore. There's one this weekend, the Kevin Costner Western movie, The Horizon.
Oh, that
3 hours, 3 hours long. Part one of a 2-part movie experiment he's doing this summer.
Starring his son.
His son is involved in it, but listen, when you put $40 million of your own money into a movie, I think you kind of get free reign to be like, and my son gets to be in it. You know, like, I think you kind of get that right.
And I want to roll for my dog as well. My dog gets a part.
You know what? I've reached this point now where, you know, Hollywood movies have been so like, okay, is the IP there? Is the brand there? Has this been vetted by all of our studio execs? Is it foolproof and safe? That when someone wants to make a wild blank check swing like this, like Horizon, this 4-part Western epic that, you know, three hours each part.
Man.
What's it about? Who knows? Like, you know, I appreciate someone being like, I'm going to make a big swing and I will really want to follow my creative desires. It's the same thing with the Francis Ford Coppola movie, Megalopolis, where it's like, I know it's messy from what I've heard from the festival reviews, that it's messy and bloated and ridiculous and out of control. Cool. That's great. Those are honestly things I am interested to see. I'm tired of movies that seem like they have been like mulched and gone through, you know, the IP factory and made sure nothing interesting got through, you know? That's why The Quiet Place Part Day One is so interesting, that like it was clearly made by a director with a vision for that story. That's exciting, you know? Indiana Jones 5, the IP reigns, is not.
And all right, fellow baby boomers, it's on us to save the movie industry. So everybody go to the movies this weekend. We have
to. You gotta see the Garfield movie.
Oh, we're losing you, Matt. We're losing you. We're losing your connection there. If you don't see Twisters.
You need to show up for the Garfield movie. It's there for you.
Let's do our part.
Yeah.
Get back out to the movies, people, and save Hollywood. All right.
Well, it would help if Hollywood made movies for, you know, more audiences beyond 25-year-old boys. You know, it'd be nice.
You might be onto something there. You are a radical. You're just a radical guy.
Hollywood, pay me for my crazy ideas.
When we return with Matt Miller from OnMilwaukee.com, we are going to talk a little bit about Summerfest. If you're heading down to the big gig, stay close. You are listening to Matt Mayer on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You think it's just a movie on a silver screen, and they're all actors and fake old scenes. Maybe you don't care who's going to lose or win. Listen to this and I'll tell you something. It's a horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie and there's no abuse. Horror movie, it's a 6:30 news. Horror movie, it's a 6:30 news. The buzz is waiting for the guilt and the hate. Switch on the station, oh yeah. They do it down to celebrate the fire and the yelling. You can dance while they're telling, oh yeah. It's a horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie and there's no abuse. Horror movie, it's a 6:30 news. Horror movie, it's a 6:30 news. And it's shopping mirror.
Welcome back to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Mock, Sweet Gal B on the board. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream. If you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, he joins us on the last Friday of the month. Monday is July, everybody. Matt Miller is here from onmilwaukee.com. And just a real quick reminder, if you are in the Waukesha area, and you're looking for some fresh flowers or fresh vegetables or a scone that could potentially change the course of your entire life.
Scones are so good.
I will be at the Waukesha Farmers Market tomorrow from 8 until noon. So please stop out and say hello. You have the chance to register for this really nice bicycle and we can chat. We have a couple chairs. If you want to sit down and make it a long chat, I'm here for you. Just keep it. Let's not be yelly. No, we don't yell. We try not to yell.
This isn't a yelling house.
It's not. We don't live in a yelling household. All right. Matt Miller, Summerfest this weekend. Is there anybody that you are excited to go see?
Yeah. So I'm very excited. I'll be at Keith Urban tomorrow night, which I'm very excited about. I am not a country music fan. I do not like country music, generally speaking. If I do like country music, it's kind of more the outlaw country varietal. I would call more real country music instead of the, as another radio show host host calls them, the flat-bellied air humpers.
Whoa, getting nasty.
I just always call them generic white shirts. That's what I always think. Like the Luke Bryans of the world who are just all, you know, that's a mannequin in a white shirt. You know, that is just. Oh, and he wants to sing about a parking lot. That's nice. But I'm excited about Keith Urban, though, because everyone who's seen him is like, he's a great guitarist. He's an incredible musician. And I'm really excited about that. That is the kind of country show I want to go to, where the musicianship is the goal, is the excitement, not, you know, the I'm throwing beer cans into the crowd and like, hey, we're going having a party. Like, that's not my kind of country. I sound like a really fun, cool guy.
You're the guy sitting in the back of the venue with a beer in his hand, arms crossed, going, it's fine.
Yeah, just me being like, I don't know, his early stuff was better. Yeah.
I liked when he was indie, you know, indie country artist.
Yeah.
If you like that kind of stuff, I would beg you to check out Brad Paisley, especially his Play record, which is a mainly instrumental record featuring Ooh. Keith Urban on a show on a song called Start a Band. So modern. I don't know about the smoothness of his belly. I'm not sure about that. Sings fun songs, but the musicianship is there for country music. So
anybody else, man, yeah, at Summerfest that you're thinking about checking out?
Yeah, I'm also going to see All American Rejects tonight. That fun fact, that was the first band I ever saw. That was the first concert I ever attended was All American Rejects at Summerfest. So going for nostalgia, it'll be fun. I don't know. Hopefully they just play all the old stuff. I think hopefully we don't hear those dreaded words, and now for some stuff off our new record. I don't know if no one's there for that. I'm also very excited about the combination of AJR and Carly Rae Jepsen on July 4th. AJR was supposed to perform at Summerfest last year. Greg is making a face like I have put three letters together he has never heard in the same sentence.
I don't. Oh, man, I'm a hip.
No, it's not the Atlanta Journal Review or whatever. It is. It's a band of brothers. They've got a lot of songs. If you look them up on Spotify, Greg, you'll find a lot of songs that you've probably heard on top 40 radio, honestly. They're a band of brothers. Their father died last year, unfortunately. They were supposed to be a Summerfest headliner last year and had to cancel. As a result of that, they're back this year. I'm really excited for that show. I think they're really energetic, really kind of fun pop, indie pop, rock kind of vibe. And they're joined by Carly Rae Jepsen, who is low-key one of our best pop stars. Call Me Maybe is still a bop to this day, but all of her Emotion album is a triumph. So I'm very excited about that combination. I'm also excited about Local Natives, a really good band out of California. Again, kind of indie rock, really kind of hypnotic in terms of their sound, really kind of beachy. Really excited to check them out. I've never seen them live. I've always seen them, only heard them on their records. So a lot of really good stuff. I know some people decried the Summerfest lineup, as they do every year.
Always.
Because their one favorite band isn't on the lineup. I think, you know, it doesn't have maybe the big name brand names or like the exciting, like, wow, they got Lizzo. Wow, they got this person names that, you know, it's kind of hard to get. But there's a lot of really exciting bands to discover and a lot of really exciting artists that, you know, if you pop around on Spotify and take a listen, you're like, oh, that's like a really interesting sound. Like, I'm really enjoying hearing that. And there's some good throwbacks too. You know, I know Baby Bash and Paul Wall and Lloyd and Mario are playing Saturday night. Those are really great from the mid-2000s hip hop R&B era. I know the Dandy Warhols are playing Saturday as well. So a lot of really good gems in this lineup. And some bands you might not even know that you already know, like AJR.
Can I just say, you've made me feel so good about myself because I know All American Rejects and Carly Rae Jepsen. And most times I don't know anyone who's appearing at Summerfest. So I feel pretty hip and trendy and cool now.
Jane, you are hip and trendy and cool. I think when you start to say the lineups aren't cool anymore, they don't have these bands, I think that's when you start to, that's when you are no longer understanding that A, other music exists, and B, those fans for that other music exists, and it's not all about what you like.
Yeah, you know, it is a part of growing up to realize that, you know, you are not the target audience for these things that much anymore. You know,
I'm not the center of the universe. When did this happen?
I mean, as a white 33-year-old male, I've got pop culture aimed at me for the rest of my life. Like, I've got things are in the book for me. But even like, you know, it's nice that, you know, Summerfest is, you know, they've got some TikTok artists, and sometimes that doesn't work out great. Sometimes they're not ready for the spotlight, but sometimes you are getting these exciting new acts that, you know, are thriving, and maybe you don't know their names, but maybe you've heard their music across TikTok or across other places. So I think it's a really good lineup this year, and there's a lot of stuff to see. And even if you're not going down for the music, they've got a bunch of fun drinks and fun company down there, and the lakefront's gorgeous. Come see our wonderful, not horrible city.
On Milwaukee.com's Matt Miller joins us the final Friday of every month. Don't forget LaughingTap.com. Tonight, Greg Bach is performing.
We got wonderful.
What?
I am performing tonight, 7:30. Let me know if you want to go, Matt. Tony on the live stream really quick said, Jane, you will always be at the center of the Amory universe, followed by Andrew. Amory.
Thanks, you guys. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Thank you most of all for calling and texting and absolutely for listening. It means everything. I hope you find some joy over the weekend and you have the chance to share it. Stay close. News is next. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. See you Monday.